Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the National Podcast, normally recorded in our studio at the Bishop Briggs Media Centre, currently recorded from our volunteers' homes. To keep in touch with us, use our social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, which are all at Q&Review. That's Q&Review. Or get in touch via information@qandreview.com. That's information@QandReview.com. Please like and share our podcast and give us any constructive feedback.
Taken from the news section of The National, Friday the 21st of May 2021. Holyrood run IndyRef 2 may be deemed legal in Supreme Court, says Adam Tompkins. By Xander Richards. A wildcat referendum run by Holyrood without Westminster's permission could be ruled legal by the UK's top judges, a top Tory has said. Adam Tompkins, a former Scottish Conservative MSP and the John Miller Chair of Public Law at Glasgow University, said that Brexit-related decisions had muddied the waters. As such, Tompkins said that a Holyrood-run independence vote could be deemed legal as it would only seek the opinion of the Scottish people. Speaking to the Daily Record, the Tory said he was worried about the legal uncertainty in the area, contradicting party leader Douglas Ross's frequent assertions that such a vote would be an illegal wildcat referendum. The SNP's 11-point plan to hold IndyRef 2 says it will create a referendum bill in Holyrood and dare Westminster to challenge it in the courts, offer a Section 30 order, or simply accept that the Scottish Parliament has the power to hold an independence vote. Tompkins said there was an assumption among unionists that the courts would rule against Holyrood's right to hold a referendum, but warned that he does not believe the law is as clear as that. The public law expert said that while he previously believed holding IndyRef 2 was not in the power of the Scottish Parliament, court decisions around Brexit had very significantly muddied the waters. Tompkins said, "If the Scottish Government presents an independence referendum bill as if its purpose is to seek the opinion of the Scottish people, knowing that its effect in law is zero, then because of the Supreme Court's judgment since Brexit, it is going to be quite difficult, I think, to convince the Supreme Court that this is a measure that relates to a reserved matter. The effect of the measures might be politically enormous, but the legal effect of the measure is zero." The EU referendum in 2016 was also not legally binding, but it's extremely difficult for any government to deny a clear mandate voted on by the people in answer to such a straight question. The High Court said on November the 3rd of that year, "A referendum on any topic can only be advisory for the lawmakers and Parliament." Tompkins told The Record it was not a dead cert that the Supreme Court would allow Holyrood to hold such an advisory referendum, but that it was also not safe for unionists to assume the opposite. He said an option for the UK government would be to legislate to end this legal confusion, but warned the political optics of this move would be challenging. On Thursday, Michael Gove said, categorically, the Tory government would not be legislating to prevent future referendums. Responding to Tompkins' comments, SNP MSP Rona Mackay said, "The people of Scotland have spoken and emphatically delivered an SNP landslide, electing a 15-seat majority of independent-supporting MSPs along the way. While it is welcome that Adam Tompkins, in his professional capacity, recognises Scotland's legal right to determine our future, perhaps we might use his expertise to convince his former bosses Boris Johnson and Douglas Ross to respect democracy, rather than continuing their Trump-like bid to deny a clear-cut election result." Scottish Conservative spokesperson said the last thing that Scotland needs right now, with a health and economic crisis to tackle, is another divisive independence referendum. They said, "We're fully focused on Scotland's recovery from the pandemic, and that should be the only priority for every party in the Scottish Parliament." By Xander Richards. Taken from the news section of The National, Friday the 21st of May 2021. Professor Linda Bold's predictions for COVID levels. By Xander Richards. There's a real possibility that East Renfrewshire may be moved back to level 3 on the Scottish COVID lockdown scale due to the spike in cases in the area, a leading public health expert has said. Edinburgh University's Professor Linda Bold was speaking to the BBC's Good Morning Scotland when she made the comments. Bold, stressing she was speculating, said she thought that Murray may well be brought down to level two. She said the area was now well under 50 cases per 100,000, the threshold for moving down to lockdown level two. According to official statistics published on Thursday, the weekly case rate in Murray had fallen to 36.5. Glasgow, Scotland's largest city, also remained on level three following a last-minute decision taken last weekend. Bold said the COVID rates in the city were stabilising slightly, but still in a really fragile situation. And she said she was uncertain it would be moved down. The public health expert also said the situation in Glasgow may make it more difficult to keep East Renfrewshire in level two, as the differing treatment between the two areas could be viewed as unfair. In East Renfrewshire, the case rate had reached 118.3 by May 17th, higher than Glasgow's, which was 112.1. Bold had previously told The Times that we should probably start being more concerned now about the two areas, given the acceleration in cases. Both Glasgow and Murray have seen the COVID vaccination rollout accelerated, with JAGs offered to all over 18s in order to try to lessen the impact of the rising cases. The professor told The Times that the number of people testing positive in the two regions was not just suitable to level three restrictions, but even heading towards level four. She said, East Renfrewshire and South Glasgow are inextricably linked. People just move between those areas for very essential reasons, such as work and education. The difficult issue is to close down businesses that have only been open for a week. That's a tricky policy call. Nicola Sturgeon is expected to announce any changes to the levels just after midday today. By Xander Richards. From the news section of The National, Friday the 21st of May 2021. Scotland's Top 10 Richest People for 2021 by Gregor Young. Scotland's wealthiest people saw their fortunes soar over the course of the coronavirus pandemic, according to the latest Sunday Times Rich List. Danish retailer Anders Povlsen was named the richest person in Scotland in the latest study, increasing his wealth by £1.27 billion to £6 billion. He's named as one of 10 billionaires in the Scottish Rich List. Povlsen, who owns more land in the UK than the Queen and the Church of Scotland combined, increased his fortune chiefly off the back of his retail empire, according to the study. He has a 25% stake in the online fashion giant ASOS, which recently acquired the Topshop, Topman and Miss Selfridge brands, with the bulk of his wealth stemming from the Denmark-based fashion retailer Bestseller. Lockdown has also proved lucrative for Glenn Gordon and his family, owners of the William Grant & Sons whisky business. The family have registered gains of £409 million in the past year to lift them to £3.595 billion. John Shaw and Kieran Mazumdar-Shaw lifted their wealth to just under £3 billion. Glaswegian Shaw and his wife own a 60% stake in Biocon, an India-based pharmaceuticals business. Only five of the top 14 spots on the Scottish list failed to increase their fortune. The Thompson family are listed in seventh at £1.271 billion, down £136 million. And Trond Mohn and Marit Mohn Westlake and family are in eighth at £1.259 billion, down £66 million. Jim McCall is 10th at £1 billion, no change in last year. Lord Laidlaw is 12th at £787 million. No change. Sir Brian Suter and Dame Anne Gloger 14th at £650 million, down £80 million. The list revealed that there are now a record 171 billionaires in the UK, with Ukrainian-born Sir Leonard Blavatnik topping the pile as the richest person in the country. The 10 richest people in Scotland, according to the Rich List, in number one position, Anders Povlsen, number two, Glenn Gordon and family, number three, John Shaw and Kieran Mazumdar-Shaw, number four, Sir Ian Wood and family, number five, Mohammed Al-Fayed, number six, Madi Al-Tajir, number seven, the Thompson family, number eight, Trond Mohn and Marit Mohn Westlake, number nine, Lady Philomena Clark and family, and number 10, Jim McCall. By Gregor Young.
This article is from The National, date 21st of May 2021, from the Culture section. Scottish band Renanes to release new version of Flower of Scotland by Greg Russell. A Scots band have been given the go-ahead to release their own rock version of Flower of Scotland as an independence anthem after celebrating Nicola Sturgeon's election victory. The Renanes, from Clydebank, were given permission by the Corries and are hoping the SNP will select their track as an unofficial anthem. Bass player Jim Renane said they played the song in front of an audience of 80,000 at Scotland's biggest independence march in Edinburgh 2 years ago. They then sang it again at the Scotland March in George Square, which was attended by 20,000 people. People came up and said it gave them goosebumps, and we've had lots of messages from Hope Over Fear and All Under One Banner asking for us to release it as a single, he said. We thought the timing was perfect. Scotland is doing so well in the field of sports as well as politics, and it's time for change. Hollywood star Tommy Flanagan of Braveheart, Guardians of the Galaxy and Peaky Blinders fame sent bass player Renane, singer Debbie, drummer Lindsay and guitarist LP a message of support after they let him hear the single. Flanagan, who also played an alcoholic with mental health issues in crime drama Sons of Anarchy, has followed the Clydebank band for the past year and championed their work. He's been filming the new series of Peaky Blinders in Chicago and sent his message after Renane told him he was finding the music business difficult during lockdown. Life's highs will be overshadowed by the sometimes overwhelming lows, but the clock keeps ticking, said Flanagan. Time will reveal the why and the who. If what you're doing brings you love and joy, end of. You win. Do not give up. Adjust and reset when required. Hard work and heartache is the life of an artist. Enjoy the highs when they come. Few people will see you succeed, no matter what they say. Beware of that. You guys got tons of talent. Keep doing the work. You're going to get to wherever there is. Renane said, Tommy is one of my favourite actors and I've watched him in everything from Braveheart and Guardians of the Galaxy to Sons of Anarchy and Peaky Blinders. I'm a huge fan. It's a deep message he sent us. I'd told Tommy that I was finding lockdown hard as a musician and he wrote this incredible letter of encouragement. The band have played their version of Flower of Scotland at live gigs on several occasions, but decided to record and release it to reflect some recent landmark achievements in Scottish sport. We recorded a powerful rocky version of Flower of Scotland because we wanted to celebrate the success of the national football team and reaching the European Championships for the first time in 26 years. Renane added, the Scottish rugby team have done well, and boxer Josh Taylor is fighting in Las Vegas for our country too. We are proud of our Scottish roots, and this song means everything to us. Singer Debbie added, it's quite terrifying taking on such a huge, iconic song, but if you don't reach for the sky, you'll never be amongst the stars. The song is available for pre-order on Amazon and iTunes. That article was by Gregor Young.
Taken from the news section of The National, Monday the 24th of May 2021. The Queen is to head a charm offensive to save the Union by Kathleen Nutt. The Queen is to lead a royal charm offensive to help save the Union, with the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge expected to play a key role too, it's being reported. The strategy, which is said to be discreetly backed by Downing Street, received its effective launch on Saturday, when Prince William described the special place Scotland has in his heart. He made the comments in his address to the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland in Edinburgh, as he and his wife embark on a week-long campaign in Scotland to win over hearts and minds. Yesterday, the Duke of Cambridge attended church at Canongate Kirk in Edinburgh. He was pictured leaving the building on the Royal Mile, accompanied by the Reverend Neil Gardner after the service. The Prince hit the headlines last week after he attacked the BBC over how its former journalist Martin Bashir secured a controversial Panorama interview in 1996 with the Duke's late mother, Princess Diana. Speaking at the General Assembly, he said Scotland features in some of his happiest memories. It was at the Queen's Balmoral Castle in Aberdeenshire that he learned of Diana's death in August 1997. But it was in St Andrews where he met and fell in love with his future wife, Kate Middleton. The Queen also made her own apparent comment about a United Kingdom in a letter to the Church, which was read out by the Reverend George White, chaplain in ordinary and principal clerk. It spoke of new bonds that had been forged in times of emergency that will serve us well in the future as the United Kingdom seeks to rebuild and reshape community life. After the SNP's landslide victory in the Holyrood election this month, Nicola Sturgeon told Boris Johnson that a second independence referendum is a matter of when, not if. The SNP fell short of winning an overall majority, but the First Minister made clear she wants a vote before the end of 2023. Ahead of the 2014 referendum, the Queen said Scots should think carefully about the future. Her comment was made while staying at Balmoral and was seen to influence the final 55% to 45% result against independence. One former Downing Street insider said there had been discussions about how the popularity of senior royals could be used to help bolster support for the union. "If you look at polling, especially on the Queen, it's a very positive thing for the union," the source continued. "That's been discussed a few times. The affection was evident when Wills and Kate did their tour last year. It's something that needs careful deployment, but it's certainly recognised that the Queen, and in particular Wills and Kate, are popular figures north of the border." Buckingham Palace declined to comment on the claims made in the Mail on Sunday yesterday when approached by The National. A spokeswoman for the Queen referred to a convention that the monarch was expected to remain neutral on political matters of the day and directed The National to comments Her Majesty has made on her website. The first line states, "As head of state, the Queen has to remain strictly neutral with respect to political matters." By Kathleen Nutt. From The National, Monday the 24th of May 2021, from the news section. SNP activist Rhiannon Spear deletes Twitter account after controversial post. By Kathleen Nutt. A senior SNP office bearer has apologised and deleted her Twitter account as she faced a backlash after writing on social media that Scotland hates the UK. Rhiannon Spear, the education convener on Glasgow City Council and the party's national women's convener, made the comment on Twitter after the UK failed to gain any points in the final of the Eurovision Song Contest. Viewers took to Twitter to give their reaction to the result, which saw the UK's entry in the competition come last. Many expressed the opinion that the outcome reflected the low regard in which Britain is held following the decision to leave the European Union. Spear sparked controversy when she wrote on Twitter, "It's okay, Europe, we hate the United Kingdom too, love Scotland." She later added, "The UK has a billionaire chancellor who won't give NHS staff a fair pay rise during a global pandemic." She also said that Prime Minister Boris Johnson's more interested in lining the pockets of his Tory donors than feeding hungry children. The councillor added, "If this tweet offends, you have a word with yourself." But Spear's comments led to criticism from both Yes and pro-union supporters. Yeser Ariel Killick wrote, "WTF, Rhiannon, this is appalling. I've given speeches at multiple indie rallies and I'd never say so, something so irresponsible, even if you're joking. Not that it's actually clear you are. It's very poor leadership at any level of responsibility and representation." Another responded, "Goodness me, how very childish." Thomas Kerr, a Tory councillor in Glasgow, responded, Rhiannon, you're the chair of Glasgow City Council Education Committee. Not really setting a good example to our young people, are you? We should be teaching tolerance and inclusion, not hate and division. Spear later deleted her Twitter account and apologised. She said in a statement, I've now deleted this tweet about the UK's results in the Eurovision Song Contest and apologise for any offence caused. Scottish Conservative Chief Whip Stephen Kerr said the mask has again slipped from the SNP, and this is another example of their toxic obsession with division. This is abhorrent language from one of the SNP's most prominent campaigners and a 2021 election candidate, not to mention chair of Glasgow City Council's Education Committee. We should be teaching tolerance and inclusion, not hate and division. By Kathleen Nutt. Taken from the news section of The National, Monday the 24th of May 2021. UK deemed an embarrassment after Amanda Holden Eurovision gaffe by Kathleen Nutt. The UK has been branded an embarrassment after presenter Amanda Holden said she couldn't tell the difference between saying good evening in French and Dutch as she appeared in the final of the Eurovision Song Contest. She made the gaffe when she was tasked with delivering the UK's jury result on the last night of the competition hosted in Rotterdam. Appearing from London to address viewers and the show's international participants, Britain's Got Talent judge said, Bonsoir, guten avond. That is good evening in French and Dutch, although I've got absolutely no idea which is which. In contrast, 10-year-old Manolis Kikinis from Greece confidently delivered his country's result in fluent English. The United Kingdom ended up coming last for a second time in a row in the competition, with many viewers concluding the result reflected the UK's unpopularity in many parts of the world. Former Scottish Government Culture Secretary Fiona Hyslop, now a backbench SNP MSP, wrote on Twitter, Nil point for UK and Amanda Holden, thinking it's funny to say she doesn't know the difference between French and Dutch. Embarrassing. Responding to Hyslop, one independent supporter noted, Scotland is pulled down by association. We need to gain independence and show our culture on the world stage. By I, totally embarrassing. Thea Butler wrote on Twitter this morning, How are people surprised that we come last when Amanda Holden literally said two words in different languages, laughed about it, and then said she didn't understand what languages she just spoke. Disrespect earns disrespect. Nazia Afzal, a former chief prosecutor in the northwest of England and an author, tweeted, UK getting no points was not half as bad as Amanda Holden telling the whole of Europe that she doesn't know one European language from another. We look like stereotypical, ignorant, arrogant Brits. Thank you and bon nuit. UK Twitter user Catherine Baker also highlighted Holden's ignorance. Yes, that is a UK spokesperson going live on air to the whole of Europe and making a joke about not being able to tell French from Dutch. By Kathleen Nutt.
This article is from The National, date 24th of May 2021. From the Culture section. Technology issues labelled unacceptable after Glastonbury concert debacle. By Gregor Young. Glastonbury organisers have said it was unacceptable. Technical issues led to 2-hour delays accessing the festival's live-streamed Live at Worthy Farm event. Event producer and promoter Drift Live said it had the heaviest of hearts and was mortified that people were locked out of the feed and unable to use their access codes. A statement said, For last night's failings, we would like to apologise to Glastonbury Festival, to all the amazing artists who gave their time to perform, and to all the backstage crew and partners who worked so hard with us over many months to make this historic show a reality. Most importantly, we apologise unreservedly to all of you who had your plans upset. We would also like to make clear that Drift is making no financial gain from this live stream event, and we hoped it would generate much needed revenue for the festival and its charity partners. Coldplay, Haim and Kano were among the acts for the bill for the pre-recorded show, which had been due to start at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Technical issues meant many people were not able to access the stream until close to 9 p.m. after ticket holders reported on social media they were unable to access the event due to an invalid codes error message. Drift stressed it is not a tech business or a media platform and was relying on a third-party company for certain aspects of broadcasting the stream. The statement added, "We are assured there will be no problems with yesterday's two encore streams, which will continue as planned at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Those ticket purchasers adversely impacted last night have already been emailed with instructions of how to access these streams or how to process a refund. Meanwhile, those who purchase tickets for the encore streams specifically should proceed and log in as normal." It continued, "We still believe that this is a very special film, and it is beyond frustrating that so many of you could not enjoy it as we intended." Tickets to access the stream cost £20. After the delay, Drift said it was providing a free link. Glastonbury Festival organiser Emily Evis also apologised for the technical issues. She tweeted, "I am so sorry about the problems with the stream. I really hope you can enjoy the rest of it tonight." That article was by Gregor Young.
The National, Tuesday the 25th of May 2021, from the news section. Coronavirus update. Cases in Scotland increase, by Angus Cochrane. Nicola Sturgeon is set to update the nation on the pandemic as cases rise in some parts of the country. The First Minister will head a coronavirus briefing in Edinburgh today as Scotland makes its first steps out of lockdown. The SNP leader is expected to address the situation in Glasgow, Clackmannanshire and East Renfrewshire, where cases have been rising steeply. Glasgow is the only council area in Scotland that remains in level 3 lockdown, while the rest of the mainland sits in level 2. Health Secretary Humza Yousaf said the Clackmannanshire is now giving the Scottish Government a bit of concern. In the past week, cases in Scotland have increased from around 270 to around 370. As of yesterday, the local authority had a 7-day average of 139.7 cases per 100,000 people, compared to 136.8 in Glasgow City. Scotland's island communities are currently in level 1 due to the low number of cases and hospital admissions. The Scottish Government has not yet announced what time the briefing will begin. By Angus Cochrane. From the news section of The National, Tuesday the 25th of May 2021. SNP release sweeping plans to establish a fairer Scotland. By Angus Cochrane. The SNP's plans to establish what they say is a fairer Scotland have been revealed ahead of the publication of a new report. The party's Social Justice and Fairness Commission has proposed a range of sweeping reforms, including moves to decriminalise drugs for personal use, scrap council tax, and eradicate poverty. The new report, seen by the Daily Record, sketches out a route map to a more just society based on a renewed social contract. Led by MSPs Shona Robison and Neil Gray, it shows what could be achieved with the full powers of independence, but also suggests progressive moves using devolved powers. The Commission was set up in 2019 and focuses on six key areas: poverty, pensions, workers' rights, tax, drugs policy and immigration and asylum. It comes as Nicola Sturgeon prepares to set out her government's top priorities for the new parliamentary term in Holyrood tomorrow, including a commitment to IndyRef 2. The Commission proposes a plan to eradicate poverty. First, it calls for the government to use devolved powers to repair holes in the UK welfare system by reversing policies such as the two-child limit, the rape clause, and the five-week wait for universal credit. The Commission says an independent Scotland should scrap Tory government welfare policies altogether and replace them with more progressive programmes, including the pilot of universal basic income and minimum income guarantee schemes. It states, "We contend that eradicating poverty in Scotland is the single most important ambition that the government of an independent Scotland could seek to achieve." The Commission also argues several reforms should be considered on pensions, including lowering the age eligibility for pension credit and paying the new state pension rate to all pensioners. The report says this would mean increasing the basic state pension to the new state pension rate from £134.25 to £175.20. To help workers, the Commission demands exploitative zero-hour contracts are scrapped, as well as fire and rehire practices and unpaid trial shifts. It proposes the real living wage should replace the state minimum wage and advocates rolling back on David Cameron's anti-trade union legislation. The report will also signal support for a shortened working week, stating, "With a fair work agenda and the increased productivity it creates, there's a strong argument for introducing greater provision for a four-day week." On tax, the Commission says those who are better off should carry a bigger share of the load to help prevent those with less being plunged into deeper depths of poverty and despair. Replacing what it sees as the dysfunctional Westminster system, the proposals would see sin taxes introduced on products such as tobacco and alcohol, as well as environmentally harmful activities. The report backs excess profits tax on sectors that have benefited from the pandemic and supports moves to consider a land value tax, which could be part of a wider plan to ultimately remove council tax. To tackle the country's drugs death crisis, the Commission proposes the establishment of a citizens' assembly on the issue and backs safe consumption spaces. By Angus Cochrane. From the news section of The National, Tuesday the 25th of May 2021. Nicola Sturgeon changed her tune on independence to win votes, says former Sunday Times editor. By Abby Garton. The former editor of the Sunday Times has claimed Nicola Sturgeon changed her tune on independence to bag votes, despite a referendum being a key manifesto pledge. Martin Ivins, who was editor of the Sunday Times from 2013 to 2020, made the claims in an opinion piece for Bloomberg that ran in the Japan Times on Sunday. The journalist, 62, inferred that due to low support for independence in a poll during the election campaign, Sturgeon had steered the SNP strategy away from the constitutional question. He said that instead of making an overt pitch for a second referendum, Sturgeon and the SNP focused on the differences between key policy areas in Scotland and England. The piece fails to add that independence was a key pledge for the SNP, that the party's manifesto for 2021 included a section dedicated to IndyRev 2, with the aim of holding a vote in the second half of the parliamentary term. But Ivins wrote, "Support for a referendum on independence actually fell during Scotland's midterm election campaign. The most recent polls have shown 47% against and 44% in favour, while crucial undecided voters remains at 9%. Only a quarter of Scots would like a referendum this year or next, and 45% want one in the lifetime of the new Scottish Parliament." Nicola Sturgeon, the SNP leader, changed her tune accordingly during the campaign. She told voters that a vote for the SNP was not voting for independence. In 2014, the Nationalists lost the referendum by a 10-point margin. This time round, rather than making an overt pitch for IndyRev 2, she emphasised separateness from England on key policies. Once she secured an impressive fourth term in office for her party, just shy of an outright majority, she immediately went back to demanding a referendum. If she hadn't, she would have had to face the fury of a party with fundamentalists showing the delicacy of her position. That the combined vote share of the unionist parties barely tipped 50% doesn't bode well for her. Ivins went on to suggest that Sturgeon's aim will now be to goad Boris Johnson into behaving like an autocrat. He went on to say the SNP should be forced to show its hand on what independence would look like and that the party has had many years to provide a blueprint. Sturgeon has gone on record multiple times to say a white paper would be provided, as it was in 2014, ahead of any independence referendum, as so many things have changed since then. Ivan also repeated the Unionist line that Scotland is subsidised by London. But Sturgeon had previously said she rejects that argument. By Abby Garton.
Recorded from the National on the 25th of May 2021, from the Culture section. Technology issues labelled unacceptable after Glastonbury concert debacle, by Gregor Young. Glastonbury organisers have said it was unacceptable that technical issues led to a two-hour delay accessing the festival's live-streamed Live at Worthy Farm event. Event producer and promoter Drift Live said at the heaviest of hearts and was mortified that people were locked out of the feed and unable to use their access codes. A statement said, "For last night's failings, we would like to apologise to Glastonbury Festival, to all the amazing artists who gave their time to perform, and to all the backstage crew and partners who worked so hard with us over many months to make this historic show a reality. Most importantly, we apologise unreservedly to all of you who had your plans upset. We would also like to make clear that Drift is making no financial gain from this livestream event, and we hoped it would generate much-needed revenue for the festival and its charity partners." Coldplay, Haim and Kano were among the acts on the bill for the pre-recorded show, which had been due to start at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Technical issues meant many people were not able to access the stream until close to 9 p.m, after ticket holders reported on social media they were unable to access the event due to an invalid codes error message. Drift stressed it is not a tech business or a media platform, and was relying on a third-party company for certain aspects of broadcasting the stream. The statement added, "We are assured that there will be no problems with yesterday's two encore streams, which will continue as planned at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Those ticket purchasers adversely affected last night have already been emailed with instructions of how to access these streams or how to process a refund. Meanwhile, those who purchased tickets for the encore streams specifically should proceed and log in as normal." It continued, "We still believe this is a very special film, and it is beyond frustrating that so many of you could not enjoy it as we intended. Tickets to access the stream cost £20. After the delay, Drift said it was providing a free link. Glastonbury Festival organiser Emily Evis also apologised for the technical issues. She tweeted, "I'm so sorry about the problems with the stream tonight. I really hope you can enjoy the rest of it tonight." That article was by Gregor Young. Recorded from the National on the 25th of May 2021. From the Culture section. The dinosaurs of gender equality in sports must become extinct, by Maureen McGonigal. It's a bit of a strange sensation as I read through my Twitter feed and feel a sense of optimism that things are changing. The hard work put in by so many is, I feel, definitely reaping some rewards. There is even a case for believing that the gender balance in a lot of areas of sport is finally tipping to a more level position. In particular, where the press and social media outlets are concerned, I sense a change, as they are showcasing more and more stories about women in sport. Let me stress, however, that we can't take our foot off the gas. We must continue to work hard to ensure that the inequity that exists in sport diminishes on a daily basis, and that any dinosaurs that still exist quickly become extinct. I have hope for the future, not just for sport, but for society in general. This hope has sprung from a couple of focus groups that we held just last week in partnership with SAMH, the Scottish Association for Mental Health, as we engage with young women to work through our thoughts on the best way to deliver our proposed mentorship programme. We need to clearly understand their needs, their hopes and their concerns, and ensure our programme reflects all these findings. Our participants were just an amazing group of young women with a great sense of society, and an overwhelming honesty about themselves, and what is required from us to ensure a successful programme. One of the other most positive pieces of news, from my point of view, is the great mix of reporters and presenters that the BBC has announced to cover Euro 2020, which is kicking off in just under a few weeks. With two Scots women named in the lineup, Ailey Barber and Shelley Kerr, I know that for both of them, there's enormous sense of pride and responsibility at their selection to this amazing role. I look forward to following them and the Scotland team at this historical and amazing time. Alongside that, there's a positive news about the return of international and domestic competition, and a feeling of optimism is in the air. We've a lot of Scottish athletes looking to head to Tokyo, teams travelling abroad to kickstart 15 months of inactivity, and local teams and clubs now meeting again on a regular basis. Long may it continue. That article was by Maureen McGonigal.
From the news section of The National, Wednesday the 26th of May 2021. A One Britain, One Nation event at a child's school sparks one Scots parent's anger, by Greg Russell. A Scottish parent living in Bradford has expressed concern that their young child is having to take part in a One Britain, One Nation week at their primary school. This week involves pupils dressing up in red, white and blue and singing an anthem called One Britain, One Dream, which ends with the repeating lines, Strong Britain, Great Nation. One of the aims of the organisation is to reappropriate the Union flag, but the parent who spoke to us on condition of anonymity said they had no doubt it was political. They said one organisation cannot reappropriate the Union Jack for their message or ideology. History has shown that movements like that breed fanatics. If that symbol of negativity is to be changed, it would be through the input of all nations. In a letter to schools, which The National has seen, One Britain, One Nation has said that during the week beginning June 21st, the schools will be engaging in learning about famous Britons, finding out how our history has shaped our country, and celebrating our traditions. As well as the dress colour code and packed lunch instructions, pupils are being asked to bring a homemade British flag to wave at our celebration. In these challenging times, it's so important we help the children to forge happy memories, the letter says. We hope that this week will really bring the whole school together and give us shared sense of togetherness and pride. However, the Scottish parent told us their main issue was that an organisation was being allowed to access a school. They said an organisation that's controlling the narrative delivered to our children. Well, I'm totally fine with the concept of British values. We all agree on the fundamentals of freedom and rights. However, from their literature, it certainly feels they're discounting or completely ignoring the cultural and geographical makeup of the UK. For lack of a better word, it's creepy. Not only that, they have a dedicated team formed within the school to promote it. It feels strange. The school is run by the City of Bradford Metropolitan District Council, which did not respond to the National's request for comment. Former West Yorkshire Police Inspector Kash Singh is the founder and chief executive of One Britain, One Nation, as well as being chair of the British Indian Association, which he also founded. The group's Facebook page has around 500 followers, with a similar number on Twitter, and they have run One Britain, One Nation events in schools since they were founded 5 years ago in Bradford. They say they want to create a strong, fair, harmonious and a proud British nation, celebrating patriotism and respect for all our people. And it urges schools that we need the support of your school to celebrate the day in the spirits intended. But to do the following as a must, please encourage every child in your school to clap for a minute, to recognise, to embrace and pay tribute to all those people who helped during the COVID-19 pandemic crisis. Oban wants to create a spirit of inclusion with a collective purpose and a common future where we all seek to eliminate hatred, intolerance and discrimination of any kind so that all our people can feel and develop a strong and shared sense of belonging in order to showcase their pride, passion and love for our great nation. By Greg Russell. From the news section of The National, Wednesday the 26th of May 2021. Scotland is just a personal tartan Disneyland to the royal family. By Kevin McKenna. I cannot for the life of me imagine why the Queen and her dysfunctional family are preparing once more to nail their medals and colours to the Unionist cause. It's not as if they've got loads of massive houses in Scotland and get to spend as much time as they like in them rent-free and having their every whim catered for by grown men and women juking about in tartan-like licorice all sorts. At the last count, the British royal family appears to be down to the last four castles and palaces in Scotland and just a few hundred thousand acres of land up here. And after a century or so of creeping up behind unsuspecting big beasties in the glens and blowing the animals' brains out while being cheered on by the duller members of the British aristocracy, you'd think they might have moved on to something more mind-expanding, like cockfighting and pit bull contests. Not even their most fervent supporters would describe this minor German aristocratic line as having been blessed with keen intellects and inquiring minds. So maybe it's because they know they can secure places at our most prestigious university and proceed towards a decent-looking degree with few questions being asked. Could it be the garden parties they get to host while they're in Scotland, and the boost to their egos that comes from them when assorted members of the Scottish establishment line up in their ridiculous tartan trews and Carmen Miranda fruit hats? That would certainly appeal to me. You could spend several happy hours later that night howling with laughter and peach schnapps at all those roasters in the Royal Company of Archers dressed up to look like the nobles in a Marx Brothers movie. 4 years studying quantity, millinery and advanced topiary at St Andrews University don't appear to have developed in Prince William any sense of irony. Speaking during last week's visit to Scotland, the Prince spoke of his profound connections to the place and how much he desired to pass this on to his children. Perhaps we could hazard a guess as to the nature of William's Scottish connections. Certainly there was at spell at St Andrews doing his herbaceous studies, but you'll find more native Scots among the Bedouin tribes of the Arabian Peninsula than you'll ever encounter at St Andrews. Now this is mere speculation on my part, but I'm not sure that his love and connection to the Central Belt will have involved a day trip to Bathgate or a wander around Cumbernauld town centre before getting something to make for his tea at Tesco and maybe a bunch of flowers for Kate when popping round to hers later that night. William, who gets to call himself the Earl of Strathearn for no apparent reason when he's in Scotland, also talked about how much he adores this country. He said, "Scotland's incredibly important to me and will always have a special place in my heart." And no flippant wonder. William was expressing his undying love for the country in an address to the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland. In the history of global subservience, does any country love a small group of people more than Scotland loves his family? During the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge's trip north, a letter from the Queen was read out to the Kirk by the Reverend George White, Chaplain in Ordinary and Principal Clerk. It seems we also give this family the use of a customised spiritual advisor during their tartan peregrinations, just in case they get carried away with the drinking and the shagging and need reminding of their lofty positions in Scotland's national church. And damn right they should. When it comes to embracing our Presbyterian rectitude, not even the royals should be getting any dispensations. Basically, the British royal family gets to use Scotland as its own personal tartan Disneyland. It always has done. While Scotland remains in the Union, its larger extended family is given the most picturesque half of the country to shoot animals, ride horses, walk the dogs and fish in some of the world's grandest waterways. And all without having to encounter too many actual Scots and their unpredictable ways and rough manners. They don't even need to send out for a Just Eat or a Domino's, because in each of their Scottish palaces, they have a domestic household trained to meet their every need. This is the extent of the royals' connectedness to Scotland. So how can any of us blame them if they're keen to avoid any constitutional upheaval that might jeopardise this Caledonian Xanadu? Look, though I'm a Republican, I can understand that a lot of people like the Queen, at least. Hell, I met her about 20 years ago, and she charmed me to the tops of my green, white and orange socks. But I'm sure we could come to a more edifying arrangement that doesn't involve her being the head of state and possessing Europe's grandest property portfolio. I'd be for letting her continue as the chieftain of the Glenficken Highland Games, and maybe keep a wee timeshare in Crail. We indulge the House of Windsor by making of Scotland nothing more than a year-round, all-inclusive holiday playground to them. So what does that make us? By Kevin McKenna. The National, from the news section dated Wednesday, the 26th of May, 2021. Nicola Sturgeon to commit to IndyRev 2 as she announces SNP government's plans, by Angus Cochran. Nicola Sturgeon is set to announce her government's plans for its first 100 days in office. The First Minister will give a statement to MSPs describing the Scottish Government's immediate priorities, as well as updating the nation on the pandemic. More details on issues like the remobilisation of the NHS are expected to follow at a later date. The SNP leader will also set out longer-term plans, including a vow to put Scotland's future in Scotland's hands within the parliamentary term. Before the Scottish Parliament election, the SNP published an action plan for the first 100 days of government, saying it would kickstart the recovery from coronavirus. Sturgeon's expected to say that she will set out an ambitious programme to kickstart recovery and that people in Scotland would have the right to decide their future when the current crisis has passed. She's also expected to say that 3 weeks ago we were elected on a clear mandate with a record number of votes to deliver on those commitments. It's exactly what we intend to do, and in this Parliament we'll make a decisive shift towards becoming a net zero nation. People in Scotland, not Boris Johnson, will get to decide Scotland's future. We will hold a referendum on whether to become an independent country. She will add, the last 15 months have been full, far too full of sadness and heartbreak, but they've also reminded us once again of people's capacity for ingenuity, compassion and solidarity. There are very few changes now which seem unimaginable or unachievable. That's why the plans I'm setting out today are unashamedly ambitious. We'll tackle the COVID crisis as our immediate priority. We'll widen opportunities for young people to ensure their futures are not limited by this pandemic. We'll build a modern high-tech economy while staying true to enduring values of fairness and compassion. And we'll put Scotland's future in Scotland's hands. She will say the remobilisation recovery plan that we'll publish within the 100 days will set out exactly how we're going to increase capacity in the NHS. It will involve increasing NHS staff. The latest waiting time figures show increasing numbers experiencing longer waits for inpatient and day case treatment in Scotland. Ahead of the election, the SNP's action plan included proposals for economic support, NHS recovery and help for school pupils. Other issues included the first steps towards creating a new national care service. By Angus Cochrane.
Recorded from the National on the 26th of May 2021. From the Culture section. Belarus could face European sanctions in wake of Ryanair plane grounding. By Richard Mason. Belarus could face further sanctions as European leaders discuss how to respond to the diversion of a Ryanair flight to enable the arrest of a political opponent. EU leaders are to hold emergency talks over the situation where 26-year-old journalist Roman Pratashvich was arrested by Belarusian authorities after the plane he was on was diverted to Minsk due to a bomb scare. UK Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab has also said he is working with allies on a coordinated response, stating that Belarusian leader Alexander Lukashenko must be held to account for his outlandish actions. The circumstances which led to Pratashvich's arrest have been described as a hijacking operation by Lukashenko's government. The Belarusian journalist and opposition activist was on board the flight from Athens in Greece to Vilnius in Lithuania when it changed course to head for Minsk after a bomb scare. Raab condemned the actions of the Belarusian authorities yesterday and called for the immediate release of Pratashvich and other political prisoners. He said the International Civil Aviation Organization's Council should hold an urgent meeting to consider the regime's flouting of the rules. Raab will update MPs on the situation at around 3:30 p.m. today. Ryanair boss Michael O'Leary said it was a state-sponsored hijacking and claimed agents from Russia's KGB were also on board the flight. I think it's very frightening for the crew, for the passengers who were held under armed guard, had their bags searched, he told Newstalk. It was clear, it appears, that the intent of the Russian authorities was to remove a journalist and his travelling companion. We believe there was also some KGB agents offloaded from the aircraft as well. Ireland's Foreign Affairs Minister, Simon Coveney, has said the forced landing of the Ryanair flight was state-sponsored aviation piracy. He told Irish News channel RTE, the EU has to give a very clear response to this, otherwise we're giving all the wrong signals. Meanwhile, Labour's shadow foreign secretary, Lisa Nandy, has called on the Belarusian ambassador in London to be summoned immediately to demand the release of Protasevich and dozens of others who have been detained in similar circumstances. Describing the incident as appalling, Nandy told Times Radio, "We haven't seen anything like this before, of course, but what we have seen is those who criticise this regime rounded up and arrested, and we should be demanding the release of all those political prisoners." Nandy said the UK should consider blocking flights from Belavia, Belarusian Airlines, and also whether further sanctions are necessary. "There has got to be repercussions for this, because as I said earlier, it tears up the international rules. It just simply cannot be allowed to stand," she said. Commons Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Tom Tukinta said, "Very strict sanctions need to be put on the Lukashenko regime, and flights over Belarus should be suspended because of safety fears." He told Times Radio, "In 2014, the Russian government, the closest ally of Lukashenko's regime in Belarus, shot down a Malaysian aircraft and killed over 200 Dutch tourists. These are not idle threats. These are real, very real threats from a government whose allies and friends have done exactly that only a few years ago." That article was by Richard Mason. Recorded from The National on the 26th of May 2021. From the Culture section, John Swinney urges Scots to exercise caution as international travel resumes, by Richard Mason. John Swinney has urged Scots to exercise due caution as international flights resume under the new traffic light system. The COVID Recovery Secretary said international travel is only currently permitted for essential reasons. Scotland has now moved to the traffic light system for international travel, with those returning from green list countries required to take a coronavirus test while avoiding the 10-day quarantine period. Those coming from amber list countries must isolate at home for 10 days, and those arriving from red list countries must undertake a 10-day quarantine in a hotel when they get to Scotland. Swinney spoke about the new rules on the BBC's Good Morning Scotland programme. He said that not all reasons people travel is about going on holiday, adding that some people have been unable to see family for some time. Swinney said, "We're trying to create pathways for essential travel, but our advice to people is that they should observe the essential travel element. We should not be undertaking non-essential international travel at this particular time." The first international flight from Scotland since travel restrictions were relaxed set off from Edinburgh Airport this morning, headed to Ferreiro in the Algarve region of Portugal. About 120 passengers were on board the 6 a.m. flight, mostly holidaymakers, as well as some returning to second homes for the first time in a year. Asked about the fact many flights to popular holiday destinations are resuming, the Deputy First Minister added, "People have got to make their choices. We do live in a free society, and we are trying to enable people to get back to some form of normality after a period of severe constraint. But we are appealing to people, given the fragility of the situation we are in, to exercise due caution and to take steps which will minimise the risk of any circulation of the virus, and to minimise travel that is not absolutely essential in the coming period." Swinney said that while there is optimism around the success of the vaccine rollout in Scotland, he cautioned that we do need to tread carefully due to the developing variants of COVID-19, including the so-called Indian variant. He added that the B1617.2 Indian variant of the virus is going to become the new dominant strain in Scotland, and we do not yet know the full picture of what will happen in future with other variants. Swinney said, "We have to continue to exercise caution, although there are very encouraging signs that the measures we've put in place, the levels of compliance, and the success of the vaccination programme are putting us in a stronger position." He added that any decision to change rules around travel will be based on clinical advice. Nicola Sturgeon announced an easing of international travel restrictions earlier this month. From today, the Scottish Government is also imposing temporary restrictions on travel to three areas in England, which are dealing with outbreaks. These are Bedford, Bolton and Blackburn with Darwen. That article was by Richard Mason.
from the news section of The National, Thursday the 27th of May 2021. Ian Blackford answers back at Dominic Cummings over dig at Nicola Sturgeon by Angus Cochrane. Ian Blackford has fired back at Dominic Cummings after he criticised the Scottish Government's handling of the coronavirus crisis. Boris Johnson's former top aide hit out at Nicola Sturgeon for, quote, babbling on TV after UK-wide COBRA meetings with the Prime Minister. The SNP's Westminster leader said Holyrood's approach during the coronavirus crisis had been more effective than the shambles at Westminster. Speaking on BBC Good Morning Scotland, Blackford acknowledged the Scottish Government had made honest mistakes, but he added, I think the public in Scotland recognise the leadership of the Scottish Government has given. He said, it's interesting that Dominic Cummings was criticising the First Minister for giving information through public briefings post-COBRA meetings. That was in stark contrast to what we saw from Westminster. We've had briefings given to Sunday newspapers and articles often behind paywalls. It's the case that everyone will have made mistakes as we go through this pandemic. But there's a world of difference in the way the Scottish Government has behaved over this crisis and the shambles that has come from Westminster. Cummings made a series of explosive claims as he appeared in front of MPs yesterday. As well as declaring Johnson unfit for office, the former senior Tory adviser hit out at Sturgeon, complaining that high-level meetings were undermined because officials were concerned about what the First Minister would say on TV afterwards. He said, the last COBRA meeting I can even remember was essentially a Potemkin meeting because it was with the devolved administrations. And what happened was as soon as we had these meetings, Nicola Sturgeon would just go straight out and announce what she wanted straight afterwards. So again, you have these completely Potemkin meetings without anyone actually digging into the reality and the detail. Because everybody thought, as soon as these meetings are finished, everyone's just going to pop up on TV and start babbling. Cummings also said that Matt Hancock should have been sacked a year ago after repeatedly lying to colleagues and the public. Asked about questions over Cummings' credibility, the SNP Westminster chief said, we need to pick through the truth of all this. But I think there's fairly clear and fairly damning evidence that Boris Johnson and his government were unprepared for the COVID crisis. Dominic Cummings is a man I don't think should ever have been close to government. The whole Barnard Castle incident is absolutely unacceptable. Nonetheless, he's confirmed a lot of the things that we already knew were happening in government. By Angus Cochrane. From the news section of The National, Thursday, the 27th of May, 2021. Sturgeon hails drop in COVID cases in Scotland's hospitals by Angus Cochrane. Nicola Sturgeon has hailed declines in the number of people in hospital and intensive care with COVID-19 as reasons to be optimistic. The SNP leader began First Minister's questions by announcing there had been 464 new COVID-19 cases reported in the last 24 hours. No new deaths have been recorded, meaning the death toll under this daily measure of people who first tested positive for the virus within the previous 28 days remains at 7,666. Total of 233,671 people have tested positive for the virus. The daily test positivity rate is 1.8%, down from 2.1% the previous day. A total of 83 people are in hospital, with recently confirmed COVID-19 down 15, with 4 patients in intensive care. That's down 2. So far, 3,174,807 people have received the first dose of COVID-19 vaccination, and 1,942,285 have received their second dose. The First Minister said the Scottish Government wants to get Glasgow back on track as quickly as possible, but she said it's got to be done responsibly and safely. The city is the only part of Scotland still under level 3 restrictions. Sturgeon said that we'd seen a reduction in hospital cases and a small reduction in ICU cases, so there are reasons to be optimistic, but that everyone had to continue in the interests of business and of everybody to take careful and cautious decisions to get the whole country back to normal. When challenged by Scottish Conservative leader Douglas Ross that Glasgow has now been under lockdown restrictions for 269 days, the First Minister said, "I know how long the city of Glasgow has been under restrictions, because unlike him, I am a resident of the city of Glasgow. So these restrictions apply to me just as they apply to others. I know how difficult it is for residents and businesses across Glasgow, but I also know how dangerous it would be if we eased restrictions too quickly and allowed a new variant of this virus that we know is spreading perhaps even more quickly than the variant at the start of the year to get a grip again. That's why there are public health interventions underway across Glasgow right now." As part of these measures, NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde has called on people living in the south of Glasgow, aged 40 or over, to visit a COVID-19 vaccination drop-in centre running at the Gurdwara in Pollock Shields. The centre is open from 11am to 6:30pm on Thursday and offers first doses or a second to those due to have it in the next 8 to 12 weeks. 200 appointments are available on a first-come, first-served basis. While Glasgow remains in Level 3, an incident management team which was set up in Moray due to an outbreak there has now been closed, with testing advice returning to normal. Moray has moved from Level 3 to Level 2 restrictions as of last weekend. By Angus Cochrane. From the news section of The National, Thursday the 27th of May 2021. Anger as Team GB snubs Scotland football stars for Tokyo Olympics. But the Duker. Football fans have taken to social media to vent their fury after the Team GB squad for the Tokyo Olympics snubbed Scottish football stars. Wales aren't happy either. In fact, such are the decisions that have left people fuming, even fans of England's Lionesses have called out the highly biased selections. The Scottish women's national team made history when they qualified for the 2019 World Cup, with fans flocking to Hampden in record numbers to see the side stun Jamaica 3-2 with the help of a goal of the year by Erin Cuthbert in a warm-up for the big event. The Scottish women's national team squad features players plying their trade at top clubs in Scotland, England and America. Cuthbert is with league winners and Champions League runners-up Chelsea. Rachel Corsi, the captain, plays with Kansas City in America, facing off against US stars such as Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd and Crystal Dunn. Arsenal squad includes Scotland's Jennifer Beatty and Lisa Evans. Claire Emsley has played for Man City, Orlando Pride and now Everton. Today was the big day, with the squad of 22 being announced. The team was selected by England coach Hege Riise, who replaced Phil Neville, as part of an arrangement that the highest-ranked team would lead the Olympic efforts. Some will suggest at this stage that the SFA should have continued with its policy of refusing to acknowledge Team GB for fear of its impact on Scotland's status as an independent footballing nation. Others are already bidding to trend No Team GB on Twitter, with many Welsh fans leading the way on this. But one thing Twitter seems to agree on is that Scotland star Erin Cuthbert was more snubbed than anyone. Social media users have been hitting out in confusion and anger, and not just those who are fans of Scotland. While Scotland legend Kim Little did make the cut, the squad announcement on the England team's website lists her as playing for Manchester City. In fact, she plays for Arsenal. By the Duker.
Recorded from The National on the 27th of May 2021. From this culture section. How to join one of Scotland's most active Yes groups for a big quiz night by Martin Hannon. As The National's history writer, Hamish McPherson always says, you can never know enough about Scotland and its history, geography and culture. Next week, Yesers will get the chance to test your knowledge of Scotland, courtesy of one of the most active pro-independence groups around, Yeth Southside. You can expect to be fully tested on many aspects of Scotland and Scottish life, and there will be prizes. It's on Zoom on Friday, June 4th, with a prompt start at 7:30pm. It costs £5 to enter via Eventbrite, and all the profits will go to the campaign when the next independence referendum comes around. You'll have to download the Kahoot app to take part, but that's pretty easy to do. Yeth Southside said, join us for an excellent Scottish-themed quiz night on Friday, June 4th. This is your chance to test your knowledge of Scotland while competing to win our top prize. All funds will be raised will be used in the upcoming independence referendum. Tickets can be booked via Eventbrite. Hamish won't be setting the questions, but if he was, he'd be asking you questions like these to get you thinking. Number 1. In what year did the Battle of Flodden take place? Number 2. Who was Mary Queen of Scots' second husband? Number 3. Which archipelago features the Westray Isles? Number 4. Who is the current manager of the Scotland men's national football team? And number 5. In which city is Yeth Southside based? Scroll down for answers. Answers. Number 1. 1513. Number 2. Henry Darnley. Number 3. Orkney. Number 4. Steve Clark. Number 5. Glasgow. That article was by Martin Hannon. Recorded from the National on the 27th of May 2021. From the Culture section. Supermarket removes own brand gin from shelves amidst Hendrick's court action. By Jane Cassidy. Lidl has been forced to temporarily stop selling a version of one of its own brand gins after being sued by the Scottish makers of Hendrick's gin, with the firm claiming the supermarket chain has infringed its trademark. Lidl is defending the case and claims there are clear and obvious differences between the Hendrick's trademark and the Hampstead gin product. Hendrick's is produced by Scottish firm William Grant & Sons and was launched in 2000 with their bottles bearing a diamond-shaped label in a trademark which became effective from January 2012. Lidl is the parent company and UK owner of the Hampstead trademark. Hampstead gin has been sold by in Lidl stores for at least 10 years. However, the bottle was redesigned in late 2020 and began appearing on shelves in December. But after the issue was brought before the Court of Session in Edinburgh, German-owned Lidl has been temporarily forced to stop selling Hampstead in its new guise. Lord Clark noted Hampstead was now priced at £15.99, with the original version having been sold in Lidl for just £9.99. In his written judgment, he noted the pursuers argued, whilst a substantial volume of products in the Defender's store were private label products, i.e. own brand, the Defenders did stock other big brands in their United Kingdom stores such as Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Heinz, Nescafe, Budweiser, Corona, Stella Artois and San Miguel. The Defender's customers were aware that well-known brands can be purchased in the Defender's supermarkets, often at discounted prices in comparison to other retailers. That article was by Jane Cassidy.
And that was this week's The National Podcast, normally recorded in our studio at the Bishop Briggs Media Centre. Currently recorded from our volunteers' homes with the publisher's kind permission. Thanks for listening.